Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in this next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with an analysis of an article that appeared in High Times Magazine's issue of June of 1997. That article is entitled, Spook Wars in Cyberspace. Is the FBI Railroading Charles Hayes? It's authored by journalist Dick Russell, the author of the landmark book, The Man Who Knew Too Much, certainly the most comprehensive, arguably the best book about the assassination of President Kennedy. This article, Spook Wars in Cyberspace, is about a former CIA operative named Charles Hayes, who maintains that he was part of a fifth column, originally a member of an elite intelligence unit that was in charge with various electronic penetration of the international banking system and finance transfer system. Hayes maintains that he was originally recruited for this type of work by the CIA, but that the CIA reneged on one part or another of its particular agreement. Hayes maintains that he is part of a fifth column within U.S. intelligence, or composed of former U.S. intelligence operatives who have been attempting to root out and redress some of the organized crime and drug-related corruption afflicting the American political establishment, and that corruption also has a corresponding element within the national security establishment. I want to point out that Hayes' claims of the fifth column have not been corroborated, but other aspects of Hayes' story have been corroborated. In the first half-hour segment dealing with Hayes, we talked about his conviction on what he maintains were trumped-up charges of soliciting murder of his son. We also took a look at Hayes' connections to people connected to the Inslaw case. That was the pirating of the much-fabled, at this point, Promise software and its alleged trafficking to other government agencies and to the intelligence services of foreign countries, where a modified version of that was used to access the intelligence files of various foreign countries. And it is also Hayes' claim that as a result of the expertise he gathered as part of this former intelligence unit, he had also been able to, along with his colleagues in the alleged fifth column, been able to penetrate the international financial system and affect the relocation of funds connected with the drug traffic to Federal Reserve accounts. Again, his story of the fifth column has never been corroborated, but other aspects of his story have been corroborated. It is Hayes' contention that because of the depth of this corruption, or the extent of this corruption, the charges against him were fabricated, and he maintains that he is the victim of injustice in this particular case. Again, I want to stress his claims concerning the fifth column have never been corroborated. Other aspects of his story have been. And what we're going to do now is to rejoin a section of this article. Again, originally published in High Times Magazine's issue of June of 1997. It was researched for us by a listener and was authored by Dick Russell, entitled Spook Wars in Cyberspace. Is the FBI Railroading Charles Hayes? And I'm citing this story not to necessarily come to any conclusions about Charles Hayes' situation, but rather to underscore the fact that our intelligence community is a more complex organization than it has generally been made out to be. There are all sorts of divisions in it, and that there are people within the U.S. intelligence system who are opposed to some of the established corruption that has overtaken much of our political and national security establishments. It is the contention of Charles Hayes that he and his colleagues, in connection with some of their machinations, came across a company that was owned by one of Clinton's backers named Jackson Stevens. It is also the claim of Charles Hayes that Clinton himself, when he was governor of Arkansas, was unaware of the MENA-related drug trafficking. He claims, however, that some of Clinton's associates were connected with that. Resuming again, this, by the way, is a reference to James Norman, who at the time was that is to say in 1995, was a senior editor at Forbes magazine and was looking at a Charles Hayes story and the Inslaw case. So Norman, who described it, resuming with the text, this is in a section of the article entitled Plundering the Pirates. So Norman, who describes himself as a liberal Democrat, visited Hayes at the Beckett Hotel in Nancy, where they spent an evening comparing notes. Hayes was interested in connections Norman had already discovered involving the Promise software, the NSA, and a Little Rock bank data processing company then called Systematics, since absorbed by Alltel Information Services. Controlled by Arkansas billionaire Jackson Stevens, Systematics, according to Norman's sources, shuffled money for covert CIA and NSA spying operations, and was also involved in a massive bank spying effort called Follow the Money, unquote. Sources also alleged a link to Vincent Foster, the White House deputy counsel whose death on July 20, 1993, was officially labeled a suicide. Foster was said to be a behind-the-scenes overseer for systematics on behalf of the NSA, even while he was a partner with Hillary Clinton at the Rose Law Firm in Little Rock. Altel's chairman, Joe Ford, has denied any connections between systematics and Vincent Foster. Along about midnight, unquote, Norman remembers, Hayes dropped this bombshell on me. You know, Vince was under investigation when he died, I said. What investigation? And Hayes, in his inimitable way, took a long drag on his cigarette, leaned back in his swivel chair and said, well, it's espionage, unquote. Hayes was only the first of more than a dozen sources that Norman eventually uncovered in reporting his Fostergate story for Media Bypass after Forbes backed away from publishing it. Initially, Hayes did not tell Norman about the fifth column, which he learned of from another source. But the article was the first published reference to the column, which had been monitoring Foster's Swiss bank account. And again, I want to stress that the fifth column has never been verified. Some other aspects of Hayes' story have been verified. They had located it, Norman wrote, by tracking money flows from various Israeli government accounts after finding Foster's name while secretly snooping through the electronic files of Israel's Mossad, unquote. Foster, who was said to have had access to highly sensitive U.S. code encryption and data security information, allegedly was peddling some of it to the Israelis. Norman continued, quote, Foster's first indication of trouble came when he inquired about his coded bank account at Banca della Svizzera Italiana in Chiasso, Switzerland, and found the account empty. Foster was shocked to learn from the bank that someone using his secret authorization code had withdrawn all $2.75 million he had stashed there and moved it to, of all places, the U.S. Treasury, unquote. In April of 1995, Norman sent a letter to White House Press Secretary Michael McCurry concerning his article, then slated to appear in that May's issue of Forbes. Among the allegations it spelled out were Foster's having learned from Hillary Clinton, shortly before his death, that he was under investigation by the CIA, that the president's wife was also a beneficiary of funds from Foster's Swiss account, that documents relating to the Systematics company had been removed from his office after his death, and that Systematics was also involved in laundering funds from covert operations, quote, including drug and arms sales related to activities in and around MENA, unquote. A week later, the White House responded that these allegations were, quote, outrageous, unquote, and, quote, baseless, unquote. Forbes, at the last minute, killed Norman's story, and so it appeared in the August 1995 issue of Media Bypass. Norman was keeping in touch with Hayes, digging up new information, and consulting him for leads. From another source, months earlier, Norman had acquired some account numbers that had been found among the personal effects of Barry Seal, a cocaine-smuggling CIA asset who'd worked out of the MENA airport and was murdered by Columbia hitmen in Baton Rouge in 1986. See High Witness News, January of 86. Quote, in a suitcase in the trunk of Seal's car was a scrap of paper, says Norman, again quoting, with a curious string of 10 letters. One source who'd been involved in money laundering in the past was quite confident that it was a Swiss bank account number in encrypted form. Norman passed it on. In the letters, all in capitals, KPFBMMBODB, along to Charles Hayes. It was not long thereafter that Norman was informed that his Fostergate story was being abruptly spiked on orders from the very top. Forbes publisher emeritus Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of Defense under Reagan, It was not long thereafter that Norman was informed that his Fostergate story was being abruptly spiked on orders from the very top. Forbes publisher emeritus Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of Defense under Reagan. Weinberger's motivation was a mystery to Norman until he subsequently learned from Hayes that the encrypted number from Barry Seal's effects had led to the Union Bank of Switzerland and to none other than Caspar Weinberger. By the way, I would add that the Union Bank of Switzerland, parenthetically, is also one of the major institutions involved in the Nazi flight capital that has surfaced in connection with gold trafficked and other assets trafficked to neutral countries, and some of that apparently having belonged to Holocaust victims at some point. It's a very same bank, the Union Bank of Switzerland, also heavily involved with the machinations throughout the 20th century of the IG Farben company and its three successors in the German corporate world, the Hext, BASF, and Bayer. Continuing. Weinberger's motivation was a mystery to Norman until he subsequently learned from Hayes that the encrypted number from Barry Seal's effects had led to the Union Bank of Switzerland and to none other than Caspar Weinberger. The fifth column had supposedly raided $2.3 million from that very account and then left a note in Weinberger's Dropbox in Bar Harbor, Maine, listing the number and a message, quote, "You've been had," unquote. In August of 1995, Norman sent Forbes editor Jim Michaels a memo with further corroboration for his Fostergate piece, including evidence emerging from credit card and airline frequent flyer records indicating that Foster had made periodic one-day trips to Switzerland. Then Norman dropped his bomb on Forbes. Quote, "If you have any doubts about the ability of the CIA's fifth column to raid foreign bank accounts and withdraw funds, just ask Caspar Weinberger," unquote. Enclosing a copy of documents found in Seal's trunk, he added, quote, "The clear implication is that Caspar Weinberger, while Secretary of Defense, was taking kickbacks on drug and arms sales. A consignatory on this account appears to be connected with a relative of Howard Metzenbaum, the retired senator from Ohio. We are talking about bipartisan payola, which helps explain why Congress is so squeamish about investigating this stuff," unquote. After sending his internal memo, Norman was told to go on indefinite unpaid leave or to resign. As Fortune noted in an article about its rivals imbroglio that fall, quote, "The embarrassing memo was particularly ill-timed. Malcolm S. Steve Forbes, Jr., the magazine's 48-year-old editor-in-chief, is readying a campaign to run for president on the GOP ticket," unquote. Fortune's photo of Norman was captioned, quote, "Ex-reporter Norman's startling sleuthing proved a little too gutsy," unquote. And the next section of the article deals with Hayes' court case and what he claims were trumped-up allegations against him. Days later, the now unemployed Norman met with Hayes at Pittsburgh along with Orland Grabe of Reno, Nevada, who had started examining the Foster saga in a lengthy series on his worldwide web page. Quote, "Hayes made some astounding predictions," unquote, Norman recalls about pending unprecedented departures of members of Congress and the Senate. "I poo-pooed the whole thing as ridiculous," he said, "wait and see," unquote. The fifth column, Hayes said, was sending plain brown envelopes to politicians containing copies of their illicit accounts in Switzerland and offshore banks in places like the Cayman Islands. By early 1996, Hayes' outlandish prognostications indeed seemed to be coming true, as dozens of prominent senators and representatives announced their retirements. Norman says, quote, "He would make allusions to some geographical area or other way of describing people other than by name, who invariably would announce they weren't going to run again. It became almost like pin the tail on the donkey," unquote. As his findings continued to appear in media bypass, Norman began getting calls from other mysterious sources, who he now believes were government disinformation artists, quote, "looking for stuff on Hayes," unquote. Both Norman and Grabe, G-R-A-B-B-E, speak of repeated attempts being made on Hayes' life, including the sabotage of his car's brakes on an occasion when all three were riding in it near Pittsburgh. Grabe's webpage alleges that one hit plot emanated from Arkansas, farmed out to a New Orleans crime syndicate which contracted with a pair of ex-CIA assassins. There would certainly appear to be plenty of people with reason to want Hayes and the fifth column put into permanent dry dock. Hayes delights in telling a story in which the column wire transferred millions of dollars into the U.S. Treasury out of secret Swiss accounts held by Nancy Reagan, Henry Kissinger, and Oliver North, and then proceeded to play them off against one another. "This happened," Hayes says, "back when North was the front-runner in the polls for a Senate seat from Virginia, which he lost after Nancy got an anonymous call telling her North, quote, had given out her unlisted account number, and they got hers and Henry's money," unquote. North's use of secret Swiss accounts in the Iran-Contra affair is notorious. Hayes maintains that the fifth column had been a leading source for Whitewater investigator Kenneth Starr, having even downloaded, quote, the entire White House database, unquote, with plenty of ammunition that's yet to surface concerning FBI files provided to the Clinton administration and contributions to Democratic campaigns. In June of last year, just as the column's purported activities emerged, then-CIA Director John Deutsch announced plans to create a cyber war center to protect the nation against the growing security threat posed by computer hackers. Attacks on international wire transfers, he told the Senate, were of special concern. As to why the banks don't just change their promised software, Hayes says it's not that easy to do. Besides, he claims, the banks have been informed that if they try to do that, their competitors will receive a printout listing all their illicit monies. Then, last September, some 16 FBI and Secret Service agents in four cars showed up in Nancy asking questions about Hayes. Some say they were also searching for the column's Cray supercomputer, said to have been installed in the back of a 48-foot tractor trailer complete with backup power supply. And on October 22nd, just before a meeting Hayes had arranged with some oil company executives in the Mellon Bank case, the FBI busted him at his residence on the murder for hire charge. It was no secret that Hayes and his son, John Anthony, were involved in an $800,000 court property fight over Hayes' mother's will. But after Charles's arrest, John Anthony Hayes assured a local newspaper that if his dad had really wanted him out of the way, he'd have handled it himself. Denied bond in federal court, nevertheless, Hayes was remanded to the Laurel County Detention Center to await trial. Also denied the right to act as his own counsel, he hired charismatic Lexington attorney Gatewood Galbraith. The January trial was, to say the least, bizarre. The star prosecution witness, Lawrence M. Myers, had interviewed Hayes for a magazine article last August and then called the FBI office in Birmingham, Alabama, to report that Hayes was looking to have someone killed. FBI agent Don Yarborough, posing as a would-be hitman, contacted Hayes, who spoke with him about the prospective murder over an open phone line and used his own return address on a packet of documents he sent to this make-believe assassin. The phone tapes revealed Hayes offering to provide $5,000 7 days after his son's proposed murder, quote, at the best place to meet a funeral office, unquote. In his testimony, Hayes said he, quote, figured the government was getting ready to set up something, so I thought it would be a good time to reverse it on them. I figured I would be able to get them caught in a trap, unquote. Hayes had been on CIA contract since age 19, he stated under oath. The Fifth Column had, quote, split off, unquote, from Bill Casey's Squad D to, quote, champion a lot of people's rights, unquote. Asked by Galbraith to name names of politicians forced to resign because of Column's findings, Hayes singled out former Maine Senator William Cohen, recently named Secretary of Defense, and Colorado Senator Pat Schroeder. No direct evidence has been produced concerning either of Hayes' courtroom allegations. When he began describing how Vince Foster, quote, had been relieved of a bank account in Bern, Switzerland, unquote, the judge ruled that such detail, quote, must be shown to be necessary, unquote, to the defense. Foster's name was not mentioned again. At the end of the trial's fourth day, new information surfaced concerning Lawrence Myers' background. In 1985, he had been charged with extortion and spent a year in a psychiatric facility. A felony warrant for him remained active in California. It also came out that he had been sharing information on several cases with the FBI, which had doctored, quote, rap sheets, unquote, to hide his background. The judge granted a 2-week continuance, but after the trial resumed on January 27th, refused to allow most of the damaging information about Myers into evidence. Kenetta Williamson, Williamson, an investigator for the Tennessee Attorney General's office, described him in testimony as, quote, a professional and pathological liar, unquote. Reporter Norman testified that his investigation confirmed that Hayes, quote, had a long relationship with the CIA as a contract agent, unquote, which has denied in three CIA affidavits later introduced, which was denied in three CIA affidavits later introduced by the prosecution. That was when Hayes took the stand to reveal his alias and contract number. But the jury believed the tapes incriminated Hayes. The main thing I can't understand, said one juror after the guilty verdict, is how he thought he could entrap the government. Unquote. The text you've just heard for in the last two half-hour segments was excerpted from the One Step Beyond program of November 9th, 1997. Once again, that information comes from an article from High Times Magazine's issue of June of 1997. The article is entitled Spook Wars in Cyberspace.
is The FBI Railroading Charles Hayes. It's authored by Dick Russell, the author of the landmark book The Man Who Knew Too Much, and research credit on that goes to a listener. Let's take a look now and sum up what we have looked at in these 2 half-hour segments. We began by looking at a summation of the situation of Charles Hayes. Charles Hayes, by his own account anyway, is a former CIA agent involved with an elite CIA unit that was using computers to penetrate not only the international banking system, but also the intelligence services of other countries. It is Hayes' contention that he was involved with a U.S. intelligence fifth column that was penetrating illegal drug-related activities by not only members of Congress, but some elements of the national security establishment itself. There are numerous allegations that were made by Charles Hayes. It should be noted that his allegations of the fifth column have never been corroborated, but there are a number of aspects of his story that have checked out. It's important in dealing with this story to understand that many aspects of Charles Hayes' situation have checked out. However, the fifth column and some of his other allegations have yet to be proved. They have yet to be disproved, too, according to the information, at least on the public record. Hayes, again, a resident of Nancy, Kentucky, is now 60, or at least was as of the time of this article, was 61 years old, and he was, by his own account, part of a group of good guys, basically, a fifth column movement within the U.S. intelligence community, as I said, that was attempting to reform or at least expose some of the drug-related corruption that is widespread not only within our elected officials, but also within the intelligence community itself. We began, one of the first elements of discussion concerned the Inslaw case. That is a very complex national security-related scandal that is discussed in a miscellaneous archive show entitled We Have Ways of Making You Sell. That and also RFA 38 discuss the Inslaw case. Those, like the other archive shows, are available from Spitfire, and I'll tell you more about Spitfire in just a minute. We gave a summation of the Inslaw case. It involved the pirating of some software that the Inslaw Company, founded by William Hamilton, had contracted with the Justice Department to allow to be used. Inslaw developed Promise, a case-tracking software. They contracted with the Department of Justice to allow the Inslaw, the Promise software to be used, and then according to a number of people who are familiar with the situation, the Promise software was then trafficked around to other government agencies and also modified with a trap door to permit U.S. intelligence to access the files of rival intelligence agencies or other intelligence agencies that were using this modified Promise software. All of that information, by the way, in the miscellaneous archive show, We Have Ways of Making You Sell, about the Inslaw case. We took a look at the MENA, Arkansas situation. There have been numerous allegations of Contra-related activity in and around MENA, Arkansas when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas. Those allegations are fairly well substantiated at this point, although there is no evidence that Bill Clinton knew about the drug-related activity. Indeed, Charles Hayes says himself that Clinton was not aware of the drug-related activity, but that some of his associates were involved with it. We took a look at the MENA situation, including information that came from Mark Swaney, whose Arkansas committee has done much to publicize the MENA situation. We took a look at the allegation that it was Charles Hayes' son's bad experiences with drugs. Apparently one of Hayes' sons had, quote, cooked his mind on drugs, unquote, and this is one of the things that hardened Charles Hayes against the drug-related, the intelligence community-related drug activity that, according to his own account, he was involved with exposing. We took a look at a number of aspects of Hayes' background, and again, I want to stress that his allegations concerning the fifth column have yet to be corroborated. We took a look at a number of aspects of Hayes' situation, including some aspects of Hayes' situation that were corroborated not only by William Hamilton of the aforementioned Inslaw Company, but also by James Norman, who is a journalist, an established mainstream journalist who writes for Forbes magazine. And we should note that Charles Hayes did appear to know a great deal about the promised software. He testified before a Chicago grand jury vis-a-vis the Inslaw case, and it was Hayes' contention that he was a part of a, quote, Squad D, unquote, that was put together by William Casey, again an elite CIA agent, CIA unit, I should say, to penetrate the international banking system, and it is Hayes' contention that they not only did that, but were also involved with penetrating the computer files of rival intelligence services. It is Hayes' contention that this fifth column work that he alleges he was involved with was originally begun under U.S. government auspices. We have also dealt with the contention by Charles Hayes, and I'm summing up the article because it's quite long and we haven't got a great deal of time to do that. The allegation by Hayes that former White House aide, former Clinton aide Vince Foster was involved with the Systematics Company and some of the MENA-related shenanigans, alleged drug laundering-related shenanigans, and also some of the controversies surrounding the issue of computer chip computer encryption or computer message encryption. The Foster allegations also remain allegations, although it is James Norman's contention that there's a great deal of validity to the charges made by Charles Hayes. And again, I am neither endorsing nor condemning these particular allegations. I think there appears to be a lot of substance to Charles Hayes' story. I think also a lot of it remains to be corroborated. We should note that the aforementioned James Norman, again a journalist with Forbes, had this story about Charles Hayes and the Fifth Column killed, and the allegation is made in this article that former Defense Secretary under Ronald Reagan, Caspar Weinberger, was involved with killing some of this particular story, in particular some of the, quote, Fostergate, unquote, allegations. It is also contended in this article that former MENA-based drug smuggler Barry Seal was involved with not only Caspar Weinberger's milieu, but also some of the shenanigans surrounding the Vince Foster milieu as well. We also took a look at allegations that Charles Hayes was plotting to murder one of his sons, and we also took a look at the questionable background about Lawrence Myers, the fellow who was the chief witness against Charles Hayes. He has a number of run-ins with the criminal justice system, and his credibility, Lawrence Myers, that is, would appear to be highly questionable. Despite the shoddiness of some of the evidence against him, however, Charles Hayes was eventually convicted. That, in a nutshell, are some of the main points of the Charles Hayes story. It is a complex one, and as I said, I think there's a lot of research yet to be done. All of the tapes that I've produced, not only the archive shows that I've alluded to, but also the half-hour segments, the interviews I've done, the archive shows, and most of the lecture tapes that I've done are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, Spitfire. You can contact Spitfire at P.O. Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. There's an email address for Spitfire, that's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, that's A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. The email address again, A-L-C-A-L-A-M-E, at ix.netcom.com. A list of and description of all of the programs available from Spitfire, and please note that all of the archive shows previously available from Archives on Audio are now available from Spitfire. A list of and all of the and descriptions of all of the tapes available from Spitfire can be found on the KFJC webpage. Point your web browser at www.kfjc.org and look in the Public Affairs section. Again, that's www.kfjc.org, and that section has been recently updated as of November of 1997. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.